Hello!
Hi!
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year! Seems to be an assumption that everyone knows what the seven pillars are.
Seven pillars of product, seven pillars of marketing.
Of product management. As opposed to the seven P's, which we discussed last year. Over the vacation, I was working on the mobile application. So now, if you have an Android, you can get it from the Android Marketplace. Matt Howell submitted it to iPhone.
Wow!
It's also been submitted for Windows Phone. So that's what I was doing. I just can't keep away from this stuff.
Yeah.
If someone has a smartphone, they can just get the mobile app.
Wow!
And it will automatically, hopefully, it will update every week.
Hello, Cindy!
Yay!
Oh, what?
It's Adrian. Hi, Val.
Adrian, hi.
Val is part of that awesome Austin product management community.
Oh, so you hang out with Roger?
I do.
And Tom.
And Tom.
You bet.
And Tom Evans.
Yeah, all those guys. Maybe a little bit of history. The Austin group is very tight. My wife and four boys are all involved in product management.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
And so they're all very much involved in the Austin community, Houston community, in San Antonio and Dallas.
Oh, that's excellent.
It's truly a family venture. We've been doing product management in our home for at least 20 years, and the boys grew up with, before they were allowed to eat, they had to be able to recite the principles of product management type of stuff. So definitely this is something that we're very passionate about. You're at BrainMates, huh? You're not out of Australia, though, right?
Yeah, we are. We live and breathe here in Australia, and a lot of our work is done in Australia. So we're product management consultants, and our job typically is to help other companies build new products and services.
So I heard you guys chat and wanted to know a little bit about what is the seven pillars. Is that correct?
Right.
So to give you a little bit of background, we use it for three things. First, for a knowledge management system, for a deployment system, or deployment methodology, and then also for a way to manage performance across the innovation channel. And so if you think about it, if you think you're involved in the innovation process, then you're probably doing one of the activities inside of the seven pillars.
What are the seven pillars? Can you list them?
Yes, so you have market sensing. And that handles all the things in terms of competitive analysis, market analysis, and customer satisfaction. You then also have problem definition, and that is typically where you talk about problem statements and validation of market problems. You then have, as the third pillar, opportunity definition.
Wait a minute. So the first one is market sensing?
Sensing.
Yes. Second.
Problem validation.
Exactly. Third. Opportunity definition. Fourth is feature definition. Fifth, road mapping. Sixth, requirements. And seventh is launch. And so most of the activities that people have, all the way down to things like simulation modeling, Monte Carlo simulation, Kino analysis, SWOT analysis, there's just a tremendous amount of verification, validation methods. In each one of these pillars, there's typically over 1,000 different approaches of trying to accomplish a business objective.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about the innovation process, it's a very broad process that typically involves almost every organization in an enterprise. And so when you talk about product management, as companies get somewhat large, you're talking about many, many different functional groups of people trying to come together with varying objectives and agendas to cooperate in order to get new product out the door. And so you end up with what we call a product management team instead of product managers. And all the activities that this product management team is participating in is what we refer to as product management.
My seven pillars are ideation, business model generation.
Oh, wait a minute. How fun.
I know. We've got seven pillars too.
Ideation.
Ideation, business model generation, customer discovery, product design, market planning, product launch, and then day-to-day product management.
I'd like to map what we're talking about. You have customer, what was the fourth?
Wait, yeah, the fourth was product design, the fifth was product planning. What was the sixth?
Market planning. Well, I've got ideation, business model generation, customer discovery, product design, market planning, product launch, and day-to-day product management.
Okay.
You know, what you're talking about there, that it's almost a cycle, And it sounds very much to, they used to say, it's a methodology, sell before you build.
Yeah.
And it follows a similar approach. Very interesting. What we've tried to do is say that, because it's also a deployment methodology, and we are process agnostic. And so if one of our consultants was asked to deploy your seven pillars, we would. And we would place ideation inside of market sensing. Business model generation would be inside of our opportunity analysis.
Yeah.
Customer design is in our problem statement validation. And so this is where we would go and do a prototype and validate with our customer that there's potential there, or validate through surveys within a particular market segment.
Yep.
And then product design, I think, is where we would talk about feature definition.
Yeah, that's correct.
Market plan is very interesting, because what we've done with opportunity definition is we left opportunity vague, because the first is a market opportunity, which is transformed into a business opportunity. And so part of the market opportunity definition is segmentation, validation, and planning for market segmentations. And so what we would do is place your processes inside that framework, and then be able to manage it with a standard set of KPIs. So within the single organization, you can exercise multiple processes. We try to tell people, don't get fixated on the seven pillars as far as the process, because they can be asynchronous, synchronous, sequential, doesn't matter. I always call them little chipmunks spinning on their hamster cages, and it doesn't matter which order you do it in.
I'm so glad we're recording.
Uh-oh. Are we already?
That was such valuable information. That was a whole education right there.
Well, good. I'm glad that helps a little bit. I didn't realize we were recording already. It's a very exciting time, and I don't know, Cindy, if you see it the way I do, but after we got off the phone the first time, I really didn't know what we were going to talk about. I thought about it for a minute, and I thought, wow, what an opportunity to kick off the new year and talk about goal setting and some of the things of New Year's resolution going into product management. And that's why I changed the topic, if that was all right.
It's awesome. Yeah.
So I'm very excited about this. I teach a class on this at University of San Marcos, which is a Texas state school, and it's not really accredited, but it's part of their product management program. So I'd like to do a little bit of that tonight, if that's all right.
Awesome.
And so you talk about the Socratic method, and I think what that means is that I will be asking both of you folks some questions and kind of lead you down the primrose path to help us discover what I'm trying to get to tonight.
Great. So the idea is, on Twitter, we'll be pushing those questions out to them. And you did give me already the 7-8 questions. Feel free to add or subtract, but just give me a heads up so we can push it out to Twitter. And I do want to acknowledge that Kathy Liggett, who must be a colleague of yours, she's the event director for PM Nerds.
Yes,
is already in the room. Welcome, Kathy. She says it's a company focused on using product management principles for individual improvement, which is so exciting.
Yes, yeah. I'm
so if you're chat. In Tweet Chat.
Oh, I see her there.
Yeah. And so you can scroll down and you can see all the tweets that used this hashtag. And as more people come in, they should show up.
Oh, how great.
And so just so you know that as we're talking, occasionally I'm just cutting and pasting these tweets so I can capture them into a transcript.
Well, this is fantastic. And if Kathy can hear me, I'd like to say hi and glad she could join us tonight.
So, yeah, I'm not sure she's listening, but I will post that. I have posted if people want to listen.
And I am going to participate in the future on Product Management Talk. So it's not just because you let me blabber. the best way to get somebody involved is to let them talk. So I appreciate that.
So I appreciate your jumping in. I do have a lineup of speakers going out to April 2012, but it still requires nurturing on a weekly basis.
You bet. And we'll build the community and get it going. So this is great.
We're actually 3 minutes past, so let me give the official welcome. This is Cindy F. Solomon welcoming you to the Global Product Management Talk on Twitter. We are live today with Adrian Tan of BrainMates in Australia, and our showcase speaker today is Val Workman. at Val Workman, who is a product management expert. And he is talking about the seven pillars of product management and you, in suggesting that we should apply product management principles towards building professionals. In this talk, we'll discuss how the seven pillars can be used to make each one of us more competitive as a product of our own product management. Val Workman has an expertise in systems engineering, performance modeling, product management, and community building, and has been a passionate product person for over 25 years, and I, as well as a family product management. He has spawned a whole next generation of product managers in the Austin area. So I'm very excited to have you today. If you'd like to listen in, go to blogtalkradio.com/prodmgmttalk, and you can listen in. We also now have a mobile application that you can get on your smartphone. Search for it in the Android marketplace under PRODMGMTTALK, and soon to be on an iPhone, an iPad, and a Windows phone near you. So keep posted. One more thing, that last year we had talked about shifting around the time to make it more convenient for more people to participate. And if you go to our website at prodmgmttalk.com, there is a survey that you can take. Please take the survey. We're going to leave it open for the month of January, after which we will determine when we will change the time and or day. But just based on the responses that are coming in, it looks like Monday is the least of the worst times. Already a request to move it back an hour. So I'm waiting to get in more responses, but it appears that people would prefer it to be after hours for us, which may or may not be convenient for our Australian colleagues.
That should be fine. It actually works quite well at lunchtime.
If you're listening in, people, we use Skype and Blog Talk Radio to broadcast live during the event. We're on Twitter using the hashtag PRODMGMTTALK. After the event, the podcast will be edited for your listening pleasure, and the transcript of tweets will be available. Okay, that is our introductory remarks. I have invited people to introduce themselves when they come in.
Very good. I just want to say hi to everybody if you're listening. And Adrian and Cindy, Adrian. If you, I don't know if you've ever seen the inside of a piano, but it's very complex. If you were going to build a piano from your bare hands, what would we do, what would we need to be successful at that product or project of piano construction? Any ideas?
Firstly, I'd like to know who would be the audience, who will be playing the piano. Need to know a little bit more about that person.
Let's pretend that you're going to build a piano that you want to put into production. So maybe your target audience is, even just for fun right now, let's just say students. So they're not really picky. But if you look inside of the back of a grand piano or inside of a console piano, what do we see? We see all kinds of very detailed, intricate wood parts.
Right.
Would we build that in our backyard and be successful?
No, not if it's going to rain.
That's right.
Not if you want to scale.
So what specialized tools do you guys envision as being required to go into this type of venture?
First of all, you'd have to have a very good ear and have some expertise in music theory just to understand how to get it to sound great from the beginning.
That's not a bad idea, right?
So I guess you would call that domain knowledge.
Start from the end in mind with the domain knowledge. What kind of shop would we have to have?
Yeah, a specialized tool shop for fixing instruments. I suspect we would have to have lying around a whole bunch of old piano parts.
Yeah, there you go. So we can make some copies and learn from what other people have done.
Right.
Makes real good sense. Now, us guys, we would want to have a bunch of donuts in the fridge. So there'd have to be a fridge, right? There's just a bunch of, besides just the specialized tools, we'd probably want a set of plans and all the things that would go with that. My point is, though, is that as we start out the new year, we are looking at ourselves typically, and we set these New Year resolutions, and we put about as much effort into it as, what, building a grand piano? Do we build a life shop where we construct and assimilate all the things we need to focus on the construction of our own lives?
Well, actually I do, but I'm intense.
Oh, there you go. Well, I like your but, and but is usually the indicator of the problem. And so I think what you're telling me is that you don't suspect most people are that intense, and I tend to agree.
I'll tell you, I lost some friends one year when at our New Year's Eve party, I asked them what their intentions were in terms of their relationship for the coming year, and they never spoke to me again after that.
Yeah. Well, I would like to suggest that the product management principles, as rigorous as they may be or as light and agile as they may be, are very powerful weapons that we can use to not only set our personal agendas and the New Year's resolutions, but also see them to reality. Much like a investor throws money at innovation with the hopes that the new products that are coming out will increase collected revenues or else decrease operational costs. And that's exactly what we're talking about here, is that if we can take these principles and invest in them, in ourselves, then maybe perhaps we'd be able to get that return at the end of the year instead of just saying, oops, that's just another New Year's resolution. And so the question that we want to grab hold of is, what are the principles that we could apply to ourselves?
So is it okay to post question one so that people can
talk about that? Yeah, now's a great time for that.
Okay.
And so the first question would be, how could we use our market sensing capabilities and practices to better perceive the way people see us today? And, of course, anticipate opportunities in the marketplace for us to serve the people that we care about more. And so the people we care about might be our customers, right?
Okay, so you're iterating, I think, a little bit too quick for us, because I had posted the original questions you gave me, and now you're adding new ones.
Ah.
So the first question is, how are we like products, and who is your product manager? And Roger answered it. We solve problems. We have strengths and weaknesses, so we are very much like products.
And I also do want to say hello to Jennifer Doctor, who is in the room, who's very excited. She says that she's delighted to have you enlightened her, considering you a very wise man. And Hans Schollender is again joining us from Shanghai, China. He is a product director for Starry Media and an independent consultant. And welcome. He joined us also before the new year, so I want to say hello to him.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, that's not probably so convenient for him to talk to us right now either, so that's great. So one of the things in market sensing or objectives that we go through is, how do we identify our market? And as an individual, you know, in product managers, it really, I don't know if I want to say saddens me, but it surprises me how many product managers don't know who their personal markets are. And yet they have the skills to identify new markets every day.
So it saddens you that product managers don't know who their personal markets are?
That's correct.
And by personal, do you mean professionally or personally in their entire life?
So, personal in their entire life. If I'm a product, Val, who is going to purchase the things I offer? Who is going to take the things I offer, maybe my talents, and consume them? We define market as the consumers crossed the features or capabilities that we're delivering. And so for me to identify my market, I need to know what features me as a person will be offering to what consumers.
Great. So Jennifer Doctor says, we are our own product managers, but accountable to our market for growth and understanding of problems. And Roger says, we can position ourselves by focusing on certain types of problems and customers and leverage our strengths. But by the way, I just want to give a shout out that Roger is also from Austin, And Jennifer is from Minneapolis, I believe.
Oh, yes. And you know, Roger's the man in Texas. And Jennifer, you know, she's done such a great job at Pea Camp up there in Minneapolis. Great shout-out. You betcha.
Yes. And so she says that there is a sociological principle that says we only exist as we are seen in the eyes of our community, and we are shaped by those views.
That's really true. But what about our significant others, whether it's a wife, a girlfriend, our children, our nephews? These people are consuming what we offer.
Without questioning it.
That's right. And regardless about that, we also have our employers. And it surprises me how people are bewildered when they lose their job and they can't find a new job when they're product managers. Product managers know their market. They know their competitors. And so from a personal point of view, I have to realize I don't have a monopoly on what I offer to my wife. And I have to compete for her attention every day.
Okay, so...
same thing with your teenagers, right? If you have a teenager, you're offering guidance and leadership as maybe a parent, but I'll tell you what, they got a lot more competition out there than me.
I think one thing that I think this is all great, and it's good to be mindful of, you know, your market and who consumes what you have to offer, but I think one thing that we need to pay more attention to is perhaps, you know, what are we trying to achieve? What are our objectives? Do we want more attention from our kids? Do we want more attention from our partners?
I think that's a beautiful question. What does every product manager want in his product? They're charged, commissioned, to increase competitive advantage through product initiatives. And we do that by either lowering or improving our cost position or differentiation. And it's the same thing as an individual. We are all about competitive advantage. And we use product management principles and New Year's resolutions to increase our competitive advantage. And so we're going to...
Not necessarily so, all about competitive advantage.
Well, how fun.
Are we always trying to compete, or are we doing other... Do we have other intentions?
If you're not competing, in other words, if you're not competitive, then the question is, are you relevant on this planet?
I would like to think so.
That's because you're not competitive. If you were competitive, you would know that those who are not relevant. We have wishful thinking, but think about it for a minute. I don't want to be so cold.
I think it might be semantics of what you mean by competitive. You don't mean it in necessarily a negative way.
No, not at all.
I don't think competitive is necessarily negative either. I just think that sometimes you don't necessarily want to compete all the time.
Will a product manager feel that way?
And if the product manager doesn't feel that way, that's fine, but maybe we shouldn't treat ourselves like product managers. We shouldn't look at ourselves as products.
What I've found, and I don't want to pull the old age card on you, but...
That's okay. I don't mind.
What I want to tell you is that you're asking for sorrow if you're not competitive. Whether it's with a teenager, you're going to be replaced. People become obsolete just like their products do. And if we can't continually add and deliver value to our market, personal market, then they have to go elsewhere for that value.
Yeah, no, I must say that I'm not asking for sorrow, but sometimes I don't want to have to compete for every little thing. And maybe that's where, you know, we go back to this sort of discussion about objectives. I don't want to be seen as, in the eyes of my child, more important. I don't want to compete for my child's attention vis-a-vis my husband, for example. So I think you really need to understand what you're trying to do before competing.
I think you bring up a really good point, is that our product features in real life, when we're talking about commercial product managers, we recognize...
Oh, Roger summed it up so nicely.
We're going to recognize that we don't compete at a feature race. What we have to do is identify those features that deliver the greatest value to the marketplace and fixate on those. And it's the same thing, that same principle of balancing your features or portfolio of features that we do as individuals. And as individuals, we say, no, we're not going to compete at a head-to-head race, feature to feature. talent to talent, skill to skill. Instead, we're going to compete and we're going to deliver value when it's needed, and then we're going to hope and develop customer loyalty to prevent customer churn. And that's what we do in the marketplace. It's too expensive to fight feature to feature, and it's the same thing as an individual. So the questions we have to ask are, what market are we targeting? And once we identify that market, the second segment, because I'm trying to move a little bit forward, is that we want to be able to say what issues or opportunities are out there in the marketplace, namely with those people that I'm trying to satisfy, what opportunities do I have that I could bring value to them? How can I better serve them? Now, I'd like to leave, I'm now shifting and talking about the second pillar, but before I leave market sensing, I'd like to just share with everybody a five-letter acronym called DANCE. And in the acronym DANCE, we identify five principles of market sensing that will serve us as individuals. One of them is differentiation. The next is anticipation, anticipating what our market's going to need. Nudge. When we are doing market sensing, we are always leaving a footprint behind. When I ask somebody, what do you need, what do you want, how's it going, I nudge them and they understand that I care about them. The cost position, the C in DANCE, is are we doing this economically enough so that our consumers can consume it? And then finally, the echo chamber. When I tell people, and this is very true in Texas, when I'm telling people who I am and what I do, before you know it, it starts coming back to me, and I start believing it myself. And we have to be very careful not to believe our own echo. And so that's the DANCE. And we want to dance with the market. Develop a relationship, a two-way relationship, each anticipating the steps of the other. Now we talk about the problem definition, and the question to the audience would be, how do we identify issues and opportunities to serve our markets better? How can I be a better employee? How can I be a better citizen? Maybe I'm a little league coach. Maybe I'm a town drunk. Maybe I'm the village idiot. Whatever I am, how can I do it better?
And so how do we identify opportunities to serve the marketplace better?
Exactly.
So these are personal and community.
Our market, I would assume that, you know, some people out there may be Sunday school teachers. Maybe they'll be volleyball coaches. You know, who knows? What we do things that impact our society. And we'd want to remember another five-letter acronym. And when we're talking about problem definition, we want to focus on FORCE. FORCE.
Okay, I'm capturing these.
And the F in FORCE stands for familiar form. As we go out and perceive opportunities, we want to write them down in a way that they are in a standardized format. O is for original perspectives. We want to step out of our own happy place, and we want to look at it through the eyes of our consumers, through the eyes of the people who are watching us, not just the eyes of what we want other people to see us as.
So O is original perspective? Or
that is correct.
So it's almost to be objective.
That's a better O, isn't it? Objective perspective. I like it. We should change that.
Okay.
Let me change
it
right here. Objective perspective is great. Then, of course, in problem definition, we want to demonstrate and achieve a relevant progression. As we develop capabilities, skills, and talents this year, we want them to build upon the things we did last year, and we want them to be directed towards something we're going to do in 5 years. As we're looking for opportunities to serve the market better, we're going to look for clarity. Clarity in our definition of what the issue truly is. It goes back to the five whys of Toyota. I like to talk about clarity in terms of if, then, but. If I do X, then Y will happen, but, and then I talk about a negative consequence behind that. And it's always in the but that I find the true problem. And you guys can say that in lots of different ways. In Texas, of course, we talk about other ways. But the last E for problem definition is elevating change. We want to make change upon ourselves in such a way that we become a bigger and better person, offering bigger and better products and capabilities to our market.
Do you think this talks to your question 3, how do we define our own market problems, or is it more to question 2, how do we all conduct market sensing about ourselves?
It's question 3,
yeah.
How to go about defining our market problem. is we want to recognize that market problems are the force of all of our other New Year's resolutions. We don't want to make what we want to do, what our pet project is, what the political agenda is. We don't want to set our New Year's resolutions based on that. We want to base our New Year's resolutions on a firm foundation of market sensing and truly identifying the problem. Once we do that, we're now ready to move into opportunity definition.
We do have people in the room. I don't know if they're listening to the audio, so what they're getting is, at best, what I can tweet, which I'm missing too much. So.
And I've also put question 3 up. How do we define our own market problem?
Perfect. Okay. I just really saw that come through.
Great. So that's what Roger is asking, divine or divine? So I suggested that you're speaking divinely.
No. maybe we should use the word discern.
Okay.
But certainly, you know, Roger maybe he was joking about this, but a lot of times you get folks, especially down here in the South, who believe that their New Year's resolution is based on inspiration, is based on this and based on that. And it's what we're saying as product people, we know the right way. We know that if we apply the 7 pillars of product management, we can find out what our customers need. Because at the end of the day, you know, competitive advantage, it may seem crass, but we're talking about how do we serve the people we care about better. And we serve the people we care about better. We just came through Christmas, and my obligation was to come up with Christmas presents. Turns out I'm not such a good guy at that. And I bought stuff that nobody wanted. It would have been a lot better if I just asked them, hey, what do you want, and went and got them, right? And so it's kind of a funny thing. We laugh at those kinds of things, and yet as product managers, we even do it on the job. We come up with product features that we think are also cool, and our market doesn't perceive any value in them at all. And so it's critical that we have that problem statement, which becomes the force of the rest of our development process. When we're talking about opportunity definition, I want to think about another acronym called ALIGN. The opportunity definition helps us align our downstream activities to those things that will give us the greatest return. So out of all the things my wife asked me to do, what's going to give me the biggest payoff?
The thing that that relaxes her.
Yes. I love working with you, too. I can see this right now. Acronym, we talk about accumulating logical steps, incentive, the gospel, and NEAT. Now, the gospel is not, well, it's not the religious thing, but it's part of strategic planning where we talk about goals, objectives, strategies, plans, execution, and learning.
And what's the last one?
Learning. 360-degree feedback.
I couldn't capture gospel. I'm going to have to go back. But I was just trying to get a line.
NEAT. So accumulate logical steps, incentive, gospel, and NEAT.
Okay.
And what we find is that, I'm going to get down to that NEAT because that was the last one we were talking about. You know, so many times in opportunity analysis, it gets cluttered with so many facts and so many numbers, we can't even see the opportunity. Always think about leave the rocks out, pure and clean. I like it in Dragnet, just the facts, ma'am. And that's a good opportunity, just the facts. Of course, it's hard to perceive what those facts, what are good facts and bad facts, but that's here nor there.
So I'm struggling with today's conversation. Sorry.
It's
food for thought, I know, but I can't see, I can't apply these principles to people. I don't know why.
You know, when we wake up on New Year's Day and we still have a headache, we say, hey, this year I'm going to learn how to play the guitar.
No, I mean, I know people do those things, but just, and I know what you're trying to say is that, you know, have a better plan than just some random statements that you make, that you understand, you know, who's around you. But I still struggle with the fact.
I think he's talking about being intentional. And I know you're very intentional.
And intentional is fine, but and being precise is good. But I think just the approach is a little bit too cold perhaps for me.
Is it just semantics? If you change the words to more touchy-feely, would you?
No, I don't think so. Where, you know, sometimes it's nice to just be without having to think about all the stuff all the time.
And I think that that's I really appreciate your honesty here, is that what I found in product management or in just decisions that we make in everyday life, there are formal processes for decision-making and for planning. And we go through them, but only about 5% of the time. And in that rigor, 5%, we establish habits that help us go through a formal process for maybe about 60% of the, or let's say call it a 30%, where we're doing the formal process, but we're not writing it down, we're not documenting it, we're not following through with it per se. And then, but maybe 60% of all of our decisions and all of our product management is based on the reflexes and intuition that we develop by doing that 5% of formality. And it's in the recognition that our lives are probably the most important product we will ever manage. And we want to put a little bit of rigor in it, but not for every single thing we do in our personal lives. We're going to identify, just like I'll wake up and say, I want to play a guitar. Mm. But I don't want to bad enough to put the resources and commitment and sacrifice into it that it's going to take to play the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't do it. And it's not a loss. It's not a bad thing. It's just we do have those moments. But what we're saying is that maybe on an annual basis, you can take a hard look at where you're coming from and identify out of all the things you could do as an individual to improve yourself, what things should you do? What features should I put into my life this year and commit those irrevocable resources to get the job done? And it's those principles or features that I'm going to develop like a product.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make sure that before I go out and learn square dancing, that's something that my wife really wants me to do. Is it really going to enrich her life? Does she really see value in that? And it's just like my product feature I'm going to share with my customers, if I was a product manager, and make sure that they see value in any feature that I'm going to develop.
Yeah, I see your point, and maybe it's because I live a complete opposite type of life. You probably think I'm mad.
No.
And I'm the one that says I'm going to leap to the universe to help me decide.
So Roger says that he thinks his girlfriend is like you, Adrian. She doesn't like to treat their relationship as between a product and a prospect.
Oh, you're great.
And I've met Roger's girlfriend, and I would agree.
Well, and there's probably a lot of folks who don't want to do that. I can't help but think about Paul Erdős, who is a world-class mathematician, numbers theorist. And on his door he has a sign that says, if you don't have a PhD, postgraduate studies in number theory, you're not human. And I have to tend to think that in my world, if you aren't this rigorous, then you're not a product manager. And I know that's false, but that's how bonehead I become. And so take everything I was saying with a grain of salt and maybe apply what makes sense to you. How's that?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I'm certainly here that I like the fact that you said that, you know, our lives is perhaps the most important product that we'll ever manage, and I can definitely relate to that, and maybe I'm so blasé that I don't create value.
I think you're creating value all the time. You're just not quantifying it, Adrian.
I'm not as precise.
And I guarantee you there are probably 80% of our product managers out there who couldn't quantify the value of their features in their products.
Yeah,
you know,
I would agree with that.
It's just... This is something that isn't something you're going to do tomorrow, I don't think.
Yeah.
So moving on from once we get our opportunities, we've identified out of all the things that we could invest in, what things really should we invest in. Then we move from that alignment, and we go into the feature definition, which is called value, the five-letter acronym in value, which stands for visualization, accessibility, a lasting impact, user-centered, and evolved expectations. And as we identify the features, and that's something that, Adrian, if you are having a hard time buying all this, you know, metal at this point, this is going to kill us right here.
because
what is our future? I don't like this. I have a hard time seeing.
I don't have any.
I have a real hard time seeing myself as a product when I start talking. Yeah, I can buy the concept philosophically, but what features do I have? In raising our kids, we would make our children identify their market that they're serving. And that's an Excel spreadsheet with the features along the rows, and the columns are the people who are consuming those features. Those market segments are, it's a very hard and crass thing to do, to take a look at yourself in the mirror and saying, what features am I offering of value to my market? And that's it's a challenging thing. As all I could tell you is give it a shot, and you're never going to walk away unchanged.
I could do it almost for at work, but I don't think I could do it for family and friends.
What let's change the word features to talents or skills.
Yeah.
That your friends depend on you to deliver. Maybe it's your person. Maybe it's your honest. I don't know you very well, but you seem to be a very honest and bold person.
Thank you.
You're not trying to shine people on. You follow, I believe, you are involved in a little bit of a catalyst leadership style where you plant the seed and you nudge people and help them grow and develop. You're not dominant and you don't override people's opinions.
Oh, can you come and work here?
so give me a... Yeah, I may be surprised, huh? So we all take those characteristics and now ask ourselves, who cares? Who wants those things? Who values those things? Are there other things that people would value more? What do I need to do to myself to deliver more value to those who are depending on me? And its feature definition is all about that value. It's not about the product feature or my skills. My wife doesn't care if I can play basketball. She does care that I'm physically fit. And so we have to understand that when we talk in feature definition, we're talking about those things that will deliver value. And we have to be able to visualize. We look at features as the outward promise that I'm making to those I care about. So I'm going to define a feature list, and it's a really outward-facing promise that I'm going to accomplish or deliver these capabilities. I may say, honey, I'm going to be the breadwinner of my home. Or I may say, honey, I'm going to be a good cook this year. I'm going to be a fun companion. Whatever it is, these are the features that I'm going to work on. And I do that so she can understand, or whoever my market is, maybe it's the Little League team. I'm going to be a better coach by being more positive. I'm going to be more honest with you folks. Whatever it is, these are our features. We want to express them in a way that our audience or our market can visualize them. When we talk about value, we're talking about accessibility. You shouldn't have to have a PhD to understand the value of each of those features. We should understand very in simple terms, much like the accessibility of a sonnet versus an entire symphony suite. Lasting impact. Whatever we deliver, it's just economic value to be able to deliver it and let it continue producing value for years to come. User-centered, it's not what we value, but it's what our consumers value. Evolved expectations fall in line with this elevated change that we talked about earlier. It's that we don't just walk in one day and say, hey, I just bought a Mercedes 550 SL, and I'm going to be a race car driver. Slowly introduce faster and faster cars until we get there. Roadmap definition. So the question is, once we identify our New Year's Eve goals, how do we get it out there and let other people see where we're going this year? Not only see where we're going, but become involved in our success. The whole idea with, you know, what is the purpose of it is help others anticipate your future, get as many stakeholders involved in your roadmap as you can, is all that does is increase your power. And that's our five-letter acronym, is POWER. POWER is the rate at which we deliver our features. Roadmaps give us power. And when we're talking about the roadmap, the P stands for possible alternatives. Always remember that you may put a plan together today, and it's going to change. You need to be able to have some alternatives ready for to be replaced immediately.
Can I ask another silly question here?
What we got?
Do you teach this to people, and do they use it?
You're saying how many weirdos are there in the world?
No. I didn't know. No, I'm interested. And in what context? Is it just always very personal? Is it in the work situation?
PM nerds, where Kathy would probably be a real gal to chat more about this. They are teach seminars and workshops across the United States on these types of topics. And they are going to be publishing a book later this year on it. But to answer your question, I think product people around the world and even non-product people are beginning to recognize some value in some of the things that we're talking about tonight.
Right.
As much like anything else, we grab what we can apply and slowly assimilate the rest. As our capabilities and competencies increase, you're going to, just like in real product management or commercial product management, you're going to start adding more and more practices where they make sense. So when we try to do our roadmap, yeah, we certainly want to identify possible alternatives. We're constantly looking for the optimal advantage, which is the O. The W is your way bill. This is something that I see in roadmapping in the professional life of people fail to do. They put things in your roadmap and they hold no accountability. Think about a roadmap as a journey, and you're going from point A to point B. And I would never give FedEx something valuable and have it delivered and not get a way bill back from them, stating who's it going to, when's it going to get there, and how's it going to be done.
So you're saying a roadmap is a contract?
A roadmap, exactly, from point of where you are today and where you want to be tomorrow, but it has accountability. Most roadmaps that I see don't have accountability in terms of who's responsible for making this happen. And then, of course, one of the most powerful things we can do in our personal roadmaps is to engage our stakeholders. Share with the people we're serving what it is we intend to do this year. And then finally, at the end of power is R, which stands for, I like to think of it as radio. What we need to do is broadcast the right message to the right people. Now, with our roadmaps in place, being broadcast with all kinds of people on board and helping us get there, of course, product management would be nothing without requirements. And so we need to talk a little bit about requirements management. Now, I'm not talking about engineering requirements as much as I'm talking about marketing requirements. The five-letter acronym is MODEL, M-O-D-E-L, and our requirements help clarify the vision or model the expectations. They model what we're going to do. Not so much about how we're going to be doing it. What are we going to be delivering to the marketplace this year? M in MODEL stands for milestones. O is for organized parts. D is design. E is estimate. And L is legitimize. And these are the points that we want to do to make sure, keep in mind as we're identifying what it is it means to be a tennis player or whatever other feature that we've decided for ourselves that we want to do today. And so if I've gone through my market analysis and identified that I have a gap that I need to fill, and that gap is being a better public speaker, then I need to set some requirements apart, tell me what it is I need to do. I'm going to define my performance requirement. My performance requirement is that spoken requirement that says I will be a better speaker. Then, along with that, I'm going to have a set of basic requirements. These are the requirements that people just assume I mean when I say a better speaker. Then, I'm going to keep in my pocket a couple of excitement requirements. Things that people just aren't going to expect at the last minute. I'm going to go, sabam, and there it is, and everybody goes, wow, I really am glad Val did this. I never would have expected it in a million years, right? And okay, and
I'm just applying what I've done, what we've achieved with Global Product Management Talk, and that's our mobile app. Is that excitement requirement? Nobody
isn't it really?
Nobody was expecting it, but I decided that it was just the next place to go.
I got to say something, Cindy. Is when you first mentioned that this morning, I said, "Did I hear that right?" I never expected it, right? And it's really kind of funny. What you're going to see, like all excitement requirements, by probably June, every other place in the world is going to be doing it too. And that excitement requirement that you came up with is going to slowly become a performance requirement.
Yes.
That everybody we know is going to just expect that out of us because we're product people.
Yep.
Before you know it, they're not even going to be spoken requirements. They're going to be those things that they just expect out of us. And if we don't deliver, we'll be in the divorce court or we'll be doing this or whatever it is, you know. Last thing is the launch or the release. And this is, I know my agile brethren out there are going to get all wrapped up about this. And they have a right to. But I just happen to be different than the rest of the folks. And I really believe in a point in time that you say, this is my release. Because I need to be able to go back and say, see, looky what I did. Looky here. So when everybody starts, you just go, yap, 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 yap. I need to be able to say, yeah, but looky here. And without that looky here, I'm in really trouble. And so the launch is all about what we call MEANS, is our five-letter acronym that I want to share with everybody tonight. MEANS is map, eliminate, acquire, nurture, and secure. And I know that this has been a long night, and probably we don't really care so much about these acronyms anymore, but I just wanted to get it there. Really the point of tonight's discussion, and as we look at some of the people, what their comments were, and certainly discussing with Cindy and Adrian, I think the point is that regardless of how much of the seven pillars and the practices of product management we want to put into place as individuals, our lives will be better and we'll be more in control of our lives if we implement even one of these practices. And as we add competencies and capabilities, we may find that we want to add another practice. We may not need to. I personally believe practices are overhead and expenses, and you don't add anything unless you need to. And that's the point of the seven pillars, is it gives us a performance management system to identify our bottlenecks and be able to determine where we need to put practices so that we can move forward. We don't just go out and do everything, but we do the bare minimum, and then we look for bottlenecks, and then we apply practices that help us break those bottlenecks. And we do that in an everyday life as product managers. And so, of course, why wouldn't we do it as people? And Adrian, I think it's, what you're saying is exactly right. Most of the stuff may not be applicable, but some of it will be. And if you find that as you're executing on your personal objectives, maybe you want to go, hey, by the way, do you want to go to the World Fair in South Korea this year?
No.
See, I'm beginning to doubt that you're a product person. I just, what do you mean? No.
I prefer to go to South by Southwest.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, yeah.
South by Southwest. Everybody, we'd love to see you out here. But there in Southwest here is going to be talking a lot about the expo on future science and technology around the world's oceans.
Right.
And there's going to be a lot of product people there. It's going to be a hoot, and it'll be a lot of fun to see folks there to participate in the World Fair as well. That's all I got for you tonight.
That's a lot.
That's
pounding.
Well, but guess what? Here's the game. Ask folks to put out a roadmap of maybe one thing, one feature that they're going to deliver to their markets, and let's follow up in a year and see how many were.
I might just try that.
You know, just wishful thinking, or were we able to? What kind of success would we have with just one feature?
Yeah.
And it'd be fun to get some reports back. And some of us are going to get slapped in the face. Some of us are going to have some success. Some of us are going to hit discouragement. And maybe as a product people, we can coach each other and help each other. So by the end of the year, we have one successful feature launched.
I'll give it my best.
There you go.
I'll try it. And my New Year's resolution was not very concrete. It was more, 2012 is about the be nice to Adrian year. I'm going to do things that make me feel happy.
Hey, what is it that would, don't say it out loud, but if you don't know what it is, I do a lot of coaching as an executive coach. And most of the people I ask, I say, one of the first things I ask them is, what do you want? And you know how many people don't know what they want? In my entire lifetime, I've only had one person be able to say, this is what I want.
I have lists and lists of what I want.
I do know what I want. So at least, I guess I know what my objectives are.
Yeah, but you see, the reason they have such a hard time answering that question is because they know I'm asking them, what do you want and are you willing to
Right. What are you willing
invest?
To commit?
That's right. And they really don't, they know that whatever they're going to do, I mean, these people are very successful. Whatever you're going to do is going to take a tremendous effort and sacrifice. And is there something, we all have, I'm going to call them fantasy wants, but what is it that we really want and are willing to put forth the effort necessary to get it? Anyways, enjoy, you guys.
Awesome.
It's been a real pleasure working, and certainly this product management talk, really a benefit. This is a feature that goes to our community, very much worthwhile, and I'm honored to be part of it.
Oh, fantastic. I'm so pleased.
Thank you for launching us this year.
Yeah, it's lots of food for thought.
Excellent.
Yes.
If you go to our website, by the way, there is a list of all of the speakers who are scheduled out through April. So next week we're discussing the power of pricing with Mark Stiving, PhD, who is a pricing expert and author. So please join
wow.
us, and also please take the survey on what the best time is for you to participate on an ongoing basis. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. It was
Bye-bye.
Great chatting
Bye-bye.
And nice meeting you.
You bet. You too. Bye-bye.
Have a great
Bye.
Bye. Thank you, Adrian.
Bye, Cindy. See you.
Okay.